Hello and welcome to this Insurance Innovation Reporter podcast, Distribution in the Age of Digital Insurance, with Rakesh Parikh, Vice President of Product Engineering at OneShield Software, and Karen Furtado, a partner at research and advisory firm Strategy Meets Action. In our last podcast, we discussed how developing a compelling customer experience has become a top priority for insurers who know that insurance has become one product among many from the perspective of consumers. And the key to any customer experience is how you reach that customer in the first place. During our podcast today, we'll explore the digital dimension of insurance distribution, a technology trend that has become prevalent in delivering on the digital insurance promise. And as we did in our last podcast, I'd like to open our conversation today with a couple of definitions. What does it mean to be a digital insurer, and how would you distinguish digital distribution from traditional approaches?
Yeah, Anthony, I think a great way to open is always with definitions. And I think what's really different about this digital definition is it's really impacting both insurers internally and externally. I think the one big theme here is being a digital insurer does not just equate to customer experience, but it also equates to an efficiency internally to be able to deliver that experience to both internal users and external users. So we think that when we look at digital transformation, it's truly taking a new lens to rethink a company's value proposition and business model that affects really all levels of engagement. And so every project, if you think about it this way, every project that's undertaken, a lens of digital should be put upon it to really obtain the most efficient and effective delivery mechanisms that are really digitally based for our digital economy that we're working in today.
All right, well, let's develop that theme a little. What steps can a traditional insurer take to become able to compete in this digital environment that you're describing? I'm going to direct this question at Rakesh, Karen. Do they have to toss everything and start from scratch, or can they take measured incremental steps? What options do they have? How do they get started? Rakesh?
Yeah, they don't really need to sort of toss everything and start from scratch, right? They have a lot of strengths. It's a matter of bringing together their stability, their experience around their products, and the insight of traditional insurance and bringing it all together with the sort of InsurTech world, the agility and the capabilities that InsurTech brings. Now, and as sort of Karen pointed out, this will likely need them to bring about changes in their thought process around structuring products and delivering it through these digital mediums.
Yeah, when you're thinking about the process, the thought process, I have three words that I use that seem to really resonate. Is insurers should start thinking about their strategies in the guise of maybe rethinking, retooling, and reimagining. I just recently saw examples where people were really struggling trying to create a digital experience, and that's because they were simply trying to apply the idea of digital to a very traditional process. And digital is more than that. It does require you to rethink a process to truly optimize it. It's not just a displacement of who does the process. It could be a complete displacement of the process. So I think you have to go back to the fundamentals. You have to rethink what you're doing. You have to apply different tools and technology. So you have to retool for this. And you really have to start reimagining and thinking about a customer and an interaction into the technology rather than a technology being pushed out to an interaction.
You know, I'd like to comment a little further on this. I can't help thinking that as we recite buzzwords about the latest technology, there is, as I think you're both suggesting, a tendency to adopt the latest technology and to become current in terms of the technology with which one faces the outside world and the customers and distribution partners. But I think you're both suggesting also with the rethink, retool, reimagine language that you'll make a big mistake as a carrier if you're not thinking of renovating your culture and reorganizing your processes around the customer, and that this is a serious organizational departure. Is it fair to say that, Rakesh?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is the biggest thing that insurers or traditional companies struggle with, is how do you enter the new age taking your existing thought processes and navigating through to the new world that you're supposed to be getting into. So they can actually start building on what they already have and extending it. It's easy to say, you know what, just toss everything away and start from scratch. That's not going to happen. What they have to do is take their existing systems, existing thoughts, and see what's a good migration path moving to the new paradigm.
Extending that one step further, I think the difference with insurers is thinking about maybe more tactical approaches to even innovation versus transformation. Digital is bringing to us an opportunity and a requirement to transform our businesses. And so cultural adaptation is going to be absolutely key and critical, but probably the most challenging part of the entire endeavor, because we can change technology, we can use new technologies, but trying to take a workforce that 90% of the time is operationally doing a job and transforming them to think differently about that job is the big gap that many will have to deal with.
All right, let's focus now on distribution transformation specifically. Distribution models and channels have been the locus of some of the most important recent innovations, which makes sense given that distribution is the first contact point with the customer. What are you seeing now, and how can insurers capitalize on this trend? Rakesh?
Yeah, so again, this is they'll do that by building on their existing strengths of knowing the insurance business, knowing their products, the regulatory environments. And then they need to use that and explore and find the best channels to deliver their products and technologies that help them delivering the products to this new generation of consumers. And then by using these newer technologies like microservices, AI, chatbots, in front of their existing systems, in the interim, while they keep on transferring their core systems, at the same time remaining competitive.
You know, I think distribution is changing to really be a multi-prong approach. And I think of this in a couple different ways. Not only is it a blend of servicing our traditional agents that we use, independent or hired type of agents, but we are now talking about the whole idea of a digital agent. And I think InsurTechs did bring to the game the concept of a digital agent. I know when I work with insurers, they know they have specific services for a traditional agent, but they know they have to provide access to systems, etc., to really interact with a digital agent. And then you have the direct aspect, which to me goes much more to market segmentation and understanding that we're now in an era where you have to provide many different options to deal with many different constituents. It's not just one way of doing business. So we often talk about the millennials, or we talk about the Gen Ys, or we talk about the baby boomers, or we talk about the florist shop, and we talk about the new startup. How do you market, and what type of tool do you present to them to engage with them? So technology has gotten more complex because distribution has become more complex, and it's not a one-size-fits-all market. It's a highly segmented market, and you've got to be able to have the flexibility to deal with the many different constituents in a very different manner.
Okay, so you both introduced elements of the necessary architecture to make this happen. And you've used the term microservices. So I thought for the rest of the discussion, we'll focus on microservices. And as before, let's start with the definition. Rakesh?
Microservices, or redefine microservices, as essentially infrastructure that helps you not only develop, but also deliver and deploy services providing discrete functionality. So you're taking a holistic view of your delivery. And some examples of these things are things like eligibility evaluation, pricing, or potentially combining or aggregating multiple things together and providing it as a service.
You know, I would agree with that definition. Is we look at a definition, you know, sometimes we're asked the question, what was the big difference between SOA and looking at a microservice? And for us, a microservice is, you could consider it a micro component of a technical architecture that can be deployed giving any application. Now, what does that mean? It means we may not possibly just consume an entire claim system that's more of a monolithic type of claim system. We might want different capabilities out of that claim system. Same with policy systems, as Rakesh mentioned. It could include rating. It could include name calls. It could look at account lookups. It could be produce certificate of insurance. And we think of the core systems as much larger before they substituted and were considered the components in this day and age from both a digital interaction standpoint and an upgradability standpoint. Microservices do definitely step in to expedite a transaction and gives you much more flexibility to broaden out and use, for example, cloud computing in a much different way than we were even doing it 5 years ago.
So, Karen, you're kind of suggesting a composition, decomposition, recomposition of these microservices, these functional components within a technical architecture. Would your comments about segmentation bear on that as well? Would you be assembling different collections of microservices for different customer segments?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, right? Even your data lookups could be very different. If you're trying to power and empower, let's say, a BOP, a small commercial BOP type of experience, your data lookups are going to look different. The type of transaction you might be trying to empower is going to look different than, let's say, a personal auto type of policy. So I'd say definitely your segments and your constituents, what you want to be able to get to is reusable components. The best analogy I always think of, it's probably overused, is Lego blocks. We want to be able to have adaptable type of capabilities that we can plug and play and reuse in a frequent manner, but are very segmented to whatever the discrete capability is I'm trying to deploy. So that can be a market segment, it can be an internal user. But the idea is to be able to reuse, and the idea is that I'm able to much more easily upgrade that capability. So if you think of going through a monolith policy type of upgrade experience versus a name lookup upgrade experience, they're completely different. And so the concept of being able to wrap into this as well, continuous upgradability, gives you tremendous now flexibility in both servicing your external constituents and in your overhead from an internal standpoint.
All right, let's shift now from the what to the why, if you will. So why are microservices in demand today? Why do insurers suddenly need them? For reasons relating to their systems as well as changing consumer demand and related distribution trends. Rakesh?
The reasons are some of the stuff that Karen already mentioned, right? You have new sort of delivery channels, and they're being used for delivering products, selling products, and servicing, and they are digital, and they're becoming increasingly popular. For insurers to now work in this digital new world, they need to cater to these or adopt these channels, because these channels have given rise to newer opportunities for the whole life cycle of selling and marketing right from gathering the information to marketing to selling and then servicing. Now, these channels have actually existed for a while. And some markets, some other industries have adopted them. It's just that I think insurers have just started to leverage their potential for their business.
I think it's very telling when we look external to the insurance industry to understand what may be some more significant computing trends that are going on. And so when we look external to insurance, we look at a market, a digital market, a digital economy in whole. We see there are companies having to do business differently because of digital needs. So certainly this is not just an insurance base type of transaction we're talking about. You know, a couple examples I would use are Amazon and Netflix. Amazon, 3 years ago, went over to this concept of microservices. And why did they go there? They're a digital giant. They have the largest marketplace, a digital marketplace that we work with. What were they concerned about? Well, their concern is as we continue to amp up, let's say it's Black Friday, or it's a Buying Monday, or whatever the date is, and they want to ramp up services, they needed to be able to both upgrade those ordering capabilities very quickly and not be stuck in a monolith type of application. They had to be able to dynamically respond to consumer demands. If someone like Amazon is having to do that, and if you look at Netflix, when they were first going up 3 years ago, they as well had to go to more of a microservice around any of their digital capabilities. And so big thing for them was their cataloging. And they were not able to previously update their cataloging type of capabilities because they were tied into the entire infrastructure. So they only could move so quickly. So another way to think about this for insurance would be that I can't update my agent portal or my agent view because my whole system has to go through an upgrade. And we say that's untenable. We know there's certain aspects of our capabilities that have to move and upgrade much faster than maybe other aspects of the capability. And so they were some of the first, and we're just talking in the past 3 years. So to me, when I look through that lens, if a digital giant is making these changes because of a digital economy, it is natural that that is going to come in and be available to the insurance architectures that we're having. And that will put different demands absolutely on our computing capabilities. But it is because today, we are looking at ourselves as digital insurers. We are working in a digital economy, and now we are absolutely putting out digital products. And in that type of economy, the shift has got to start to happen.
Okay, but we're still kind of in the throes of transformation, and transformation implies both a point of departure and a destination. So could we say that microservices fit within a class of complementary capabilities that bridge the gap between carriers' current system environments and a digitally native future architecture or some other desirable future state? Are they like RPA in that respect as being a step on the way, Rakesh?
Not if you really apply the strict definition of microservices. That would require a new way of thinking and perhaps even architecting applications. The reality, though, is that it's going to be it's difficult to move from where you are to this new architecture overnight. So in a few cases, systems will be developed with microservices in mind. But in most of them, they will have front ends providing microservices as insurers and core system providers start changing the back-end architecture to be more microservices compliant.
Yeah, I would look at that definition and viewpoint to be very true. That if you have the opportunity, then I think you can capitalize on microservices right away. But I think I agree. This is not an overnight capability. The great news is, though, is that you can blend the combination of a microservice and using the concept being a little bit technical, using a concept of a container where you're able to blend in maybe some what you might call legacy or current capability with your new microservice capabilities. And so you can use some of the capabilities in a transitioning method as you're trying to go over. It is not a flip the switch type of capability, but you can transition to it. But as Rakesh mentioned, definitely front end type of activities are the first to go.
All right, let's get a little more specific. Where do microservices fit in the insurance supply chain today? What are some of the specific advantages of microservices? What are functions they can perform better than alternative technologies or approaches?
They fit at sort of all different levels, right? Starting from, as I mentioned earlier, evaluating eligibility to quickly pricing something and providing a sort of a micro price, if you will. And then finally evaluating the customer information and then selling something. All of this then feeds into your data analytics engine to then start your next cycle of decision making, starting with eligibility evaluation and so on. So again, different levels during the entire process. Now, because as we mentioned that we have so many different channels coming up, it's also important to ensure that the things that you're selling remain consistent across these different channels. It's how you're selling them is changing, perhaps with some variations to what is being sold. So the advantages that microservices will provide is across these disparate and disconnected channels, you are still providing consistency, you know, across different application providers in your enterprise.
You know, an example that I think of or an advantage of microservices, I'm just going to use rating as an example, and I'm going to harken back to the comment I made about rethinking, retooling, reimagining. When we're working in a digital infrastructure and we're going to rate, let's say, 100 vehicle fleet or 100 locations on a risk, you know, these tend to be time-intensive type of calculations. And so even from the rating perspective, I would say we've got to be thinking about microservices both in perspective to the actual use of the service and where the service is performed. And so if you were to break down rating in a maybe traditional way, it might take 5 or 6 minutes to rate that multi-vehicle or multi-location type of policy to the extent I was talking about. But a microservice maybe working within a cloud type of architecture would be able to get that down to sub-second type of calculations. So I think this is where it makes us have to really rethink the process because the advantages are so significant. No one's going to sit there waiting 6 minutes for a transaction to calculate, for example, in rating. But if you had the ability to spin up the instance and if you had the ability to make the multiple calls, to be able to perform the multivariate rating, to be able to bring back the numerous type of scenarios that we're now demanded to bring back. It's never, I'm just going to call one rate practically and I'm going to get one rate, especially for front-end distribution, that there has to be a different lens we put on those transactions to expedite the transactions. And that's where I think microservices can really help us step in because we're able to execute that transaction in a much more expedited fashion than maybe our traditional integrations and our traditional approaches to rating as an example. It's just a very different approach, and I think it yields a much faster result than in our traditional way. You can see why that would work much better in a digital experience than maybe the experience that is quite, quote, acceptable for us today, but is truly not acceptable.
Okay, so where do insurers procure microservices? Are core system vendors themselves purveyors of microservices? Is their role to adapt their systems to consume them for the benefit of their insurance carrier clients? Will they also be curators of microservices ancillary to their core system capabilities? Where should insurers be looking to find the microservices they need, Rakesh?
So actually it could be in different places. So first, I think core system vendors need to support both consuming as well as providing microservices because they have functionality in their system, capabilities in their system that are central to insurance processing. And it's just that these are not available as, or traditionally not available as services. So what they'll have to do is re-architect or slowly re-architect their application so that these discrete pieces of functionality are available through microservices. So the first place insurers should be looking at are their core systems. And then depending on the flexibility the system offers, they will need other technology, perhaps systems that just focus on one piece of the puzzle, and combining these different technologies together along with the core system to provide a sort of a suite of microservices to the external world, to the different digital marketing channels.
Well, why is it so challenging today to develop the capabilities needed for direct-to-consumer capabilities? Karen mentioned how overused the analogy of Legos was, and that raises the question, wasn't SOA supposed to solve these kinds of problems? We were talking about services-based architecture years ago. What's different about this services-based architecture, Rakesh?
So at some level, there is no difference, right? SOA was supposed to provide that. And the functional capabilities that we are asking from microservices is essentially the same. However, I would like to see, I view microservices as the next generation of SOA. That's because SOA largely focused on just the functional capabilities, whereas microservices, in addition to the functional capabilities or the granular level functions, also has requirements around delivery and deployment of these services. I think Karen mentioned earlier about being able to quickly deliver something on an agent portal, for example. SOA never had those types of requirements. It's the microservices architecture that's requiring us to meet all of these different demands. SOA earlier was developed or provided through this monolithic application, which meant that changing something usually meant a major upgrade or a large impact to the system. Direct-to-consumer world that we live today is far more stringent in its requirements for time to deliver these changes. And so we have this next generation that we talk about and call it microservices.
You know, I think the difference, piggybacking on what Rakesh was mentioning, is, you know, if we think about it, SOA was over 10 years ago. Over 10 years ago. And, you know, if I just look at what has changed is the absolute, I mean, we probably 10 years ago said, oh my God, we've got to move faster. But nowadays, the speed of development and the speed of deployment, which translates really to the speed to value, is so different. They're real game changers in the microservice world. I think that is like the one piece, is that everyone is trying to get value out of this work so much faster. And our pace, I'm sure there's no one in insurance who would disagree, our pace of today is completely different than 10 years ago, and we really thought that was fast back then. And so I think the speed and capability and transformation of digital, quite frankly, is so different. It was natural that, as in everything, there would be an evolution. And microservices, to me, absolutely is an evolution out of SOA, but it is not SOA. And I think a lot of the heavy integrations that sort of came with SOA aren't necessarily the same requirements that are coming out of microservices. That's much more flexible, much more nimble. As a matter of fact, that's probably the one thing we have to look to control is the amount of flexibility and how do you keep control over the services. But obviously, the speed and speed to value is more significant when you can deploy in these aggressive timelines that we are looking at nowadays.
Well, those are excellent responses to the question of how does microservices differ from SOA. Very interesting. So we've been talking about microservices in particular. What does the need for digitally native applications say more broadly about the direction for insurance systems architecture? Rakesh?
The insurance system or the architecture that they're based on, it's not really any different than applications in other areas or other industries, right? And it shouldn't be. It's all about the ability to quickly respond to changing demands in the increasingly digital world. So Karen mentioned speed, right? And it's all about that. So, and that's exactly what a microservices architecture provides. It's sort of by enabling changes and deployments to occur in smaller units so that they can be delivered and deployed faster. And because these units are smaller, systems using or utilizing these services have greater flexibility in packaging them in different forms that are channel specific, and perhaps combining them and creating new value-added services.
You know, and I think those are excellent points, because I do believe that the transformation within the system and developing smaller components to provide for upgradability is very critical. If we really look at the direction of insurance system architectures and how can they work in a much more digitally native type of environment, I think what we see are applications are needed to transform. They need to move from maybe what would have been considered modern architectures of yesterday, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, but they're now needing to really become more digitally agile applications. In a new era of computing, it's important, and no one wants to continue to go through this process, but you've got to make the leap over into more digitally native, responsive type of insurance systems that are really going to be able to power you for the next 10 years. And I think that that is a big shift that are going to impact, obviously, both insurance companies, and it's going to impact the software and the software we consume in the market.
Well, we've had a far-ranging conversation touching on a lot of hot topics. I thought we might wrap up with your specific recommendations for carriers today in terms of integrating the concept of microservices within their plans and then making use of them. Rakesh?
So I think the first question they need to answer is how dependent or how are their future and current plans been influenced by their existing systems or any restrictions that their existing systems may have in their landscape. Secondly, take a real hard look at these systems to see if there are opportunities in the short term to manage these gaps by creative temporary solutions, like perhaps creating a facade services layer, right, just to help you bridge through the gap, the transition that we spoke about earlier. And then finally, start looking at other core systems in the marketplace that have modern architecture that sort of separate the business and technology layers and have individual components that can be deployed independently and therefore can provide and operate easy into this multi-channel, microservices-based digital world.
I would have three key points as a summary of the discussion. One is we are going through a paradigm shift. We're going through a paradigm shift in the world of software. I mean, there's so few who feel that their upgrade experience is ideal, and we recognize that we've got to be more responsive and more agile. And so we've got to be able to transform and become more incremental in change rather than large releases. So that it is a big shift, and I would say, how are you, take that and say, how are you aligned to be able to deal with that kind of shift in process and in technology? My second is really digitally and becoming more digitally native. You know, we've been going through more, I would say, the digital transformation, but we're going to come out the other side. And technology and processes are going to start to become more digitally native. And so how do you start to capitalize on that capability, and how do you start to create roadmaps that send you down that path? Because this is a transition period, and we've talked about that, but you've got to start to be ready to come out the other side, because these technologies are going to be able to help you transform your businesses, but they don't transform your business, you do. And so as you're able to adapt more digitally native approaches to your applications, and you start to go down that path of rethinking and retooling and reimagining, your resourcing, your organizations will need to shift and adapt as well. And my last one is really, cloud's going to start to become fundamental to start to operationalize, whether it's real-time analytics, whether it's transforming your environment, whether it's gaining you the computing capability that you're really looking at. It is integral, and it is a part of this movement. And so as an architecture concern, I would start to really think about, how are you aligning your architecture services and your computing services, and understanding that there's probably great variety of approaches that you can take to shore this up. And so in summary, we're all becoming digital businesses. And digital has got to be, again, the lens applied to every change you're making. So it's not an afterthought. So it's not the 400th and first project that you're doing. It's native. You've got to make it native decisions within your organizations every day.
Well, thank you, Karen, and thank you, Rakesh. This has been a very enjoyable conversation. I appreciate your thoughtful and interesting responses, and I'm sure our listeners have as well.
Thank you, Anthony, and thank you to Karen for bringing her industry knowledge to this discussion. And thanks to everyone who's been listening to us.
It's been a pleasure to work with both you, Anthony, and Rakesh. Really have enjoyed it, and I echo as well. Thank you for listening to this this podcast.
Well, this concludes our Insurance Innovation Reporter podcast, Digital Insurance Distribution, with Rakesh Parikh of OneShield Software and Karen Furtado of Strategy Meets Action. We thank you all for taking the time to join us today.